Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We're going to spend some time reflecting on Nobel laureate Toni Morrison, who died Monday in New York. She was 88 years old. The author of 11 novels, including works like Beloved, The Bluest Eye, and Song of Solomon, Morrison was the first Black woman to win the Nobel Prize in Literature. She also has received a Pulitzer Prize and a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Her work profoundly impacted the two people in the studio with me today. Janae Osterholt is a cultural writer for the Boston Globe. Janae, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Jabari Yassim, distinguished fellow at Emerson College and director of Emerson's Graduate Creative Writing Program. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Join the conversation. What did Toni Morrison mean to you? How did she impact your life? Or if you write, how did she impact your writing? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston. Janae, let me start with you. What did Toni Morrison mean to you personally?
Permission. Grace. A mastery of language that's unmatched. But more than anything, a safe space to be fully myself, to be fully Black, to be writing for other people who are Black outside of the white gaze. I just feel like there's this thing that happens when you're a Black body living in a white country, and you're always kind of in that lens, under that microscope, and she got rid of that and created a world that was just ours, for us. And I think it was a great permission for a lot of us.
So Jabari, one of the things that Janae just said was she referred to the white gaze, which is something that Toni Morrison talked about in at least one interview, but I think more than once.
Mm-hmm.
How did her work step outside of the white gaze and create permission for Black writers to do that?
Well, I think she was pretty outspoken about putting the Black story, putting Black people at the center of the narrative. And she, she condemned this white impulse to push aside the Black narrative. She called it the master narrative, in which the powerful impose the story on the powerless. And her writing was, even in her fiction and nonfiction, very much an eloquent rejoinder to this impulse to marginalize Black experience.
1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Please join us in remembering Toni Morrison and reflecting on the incredible importance of her work. Jabari, I'm going to stay with you for a minute longer and ask you, what did her work mean to you?
Well, she was an elder. She was the generation that preceded mine. And, I don't want to abuse the term that Janae, rightly introduced, permission, but it was sort of very much in that vein. She sort of opened a path that had existed before her, but which she sort of blasted open and said, you don't have to write about what you know, which is what we're always told. Write about what you don't know and don't be afraid of anything. So it was this fearlessness, this combination of eloquence and power, which set a righteous example for the rest of us, something to aspire to.
Janae, her first novel, The Bluest Eye, started as a short story in a workshop, and it took her about 5 years to write. It was first published in 1970. Here's what Toni Morrison said in an interview in 1988 about what initially inspired her to begin writing this story of a young African-American girl growing up after the Great Depression.
The very first book I wrote, called The Bluest Eye, was when I was not really thinking about publishing or reviewers or other readers. It was a book I wanted to read, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I began to write it.
What gap was she filling in that first book and early in her career?
Visibility. It's not just a gap. It was erasure. Over and over again, I've talked to different women, Black women, over the last 24 hours about Toni Morrison in group chats and group me and just among friends and peers. And that book is the book that comes up the most. And I think for a lot of Black women collectively, it's like the first time they felt seen, because there is a great erasure of Black people, but especially Black women. So I feel like in many ways, what Jabari was saying, how she blasted that door open, it also was a corrective. Like, I feel like she her whole canon in many ways is a corrective to erasure and kind of like the lost files of Black American experiences. And I think she just continues to, sorry.
No, you're great.
Sort of live with us and just wrap us, in her words, like a hug. It was a hug.
Jabari, let's remember her life. Tell us a little more about her life, if you can.
Sure. I mean, she was born in 1931 in Lorain, Ohio. Early in her career, she was a really important editor at Random House. She studied undergrad at Howard University, graduate school at Cornell, taught at Howard, and eventually at Princeton. So she occupies this huge space in the culture, sort of in three ways. One as a writer, one as an educator and mentor for the generations of African American writers that came after her, and also as an orator. You know, she was equally eloquent at the mic in the same way that she was on the page, which isn't true of a lot of writers once you pull them out of their garrets and put them in front of a mic. But she could do all those things and do them all equally well.
I'm so struck by you saying she was equally eloquent at the mic. Let's listen to her talking about language.
Language can never live up to life once and for all. Nor should it. Language can never pin down slavery, genocide, war. Nor should it yearn for the arrogance to be able to do so. Its force, its felicity, is in its reach toward the ineffable.
That was from her Nobel Prize acceptance speech, and it is a tour de force of a speech, except that doesn't quite seem right to say, because I think every time she opened her mouth, there was a tour de force behind it. Janae, you wrote an incredible piece for the Boston Globe where you describe how you perceived Toni Morrison's words, writing of Black women, that, quote, we were empowered by not only seeing ourselves, but by the language, end quote. What was it about her language that empowered you?
I feel like Toni gave us magic and miracles and brutal beauty and softness. If you're a little Black girl, you know what it's like to sit between your mom or your auntie or your grandma's legs and get your edges pulled into braids. She was like that little massage they take to give you when it hurts a little. Just masterful. She was a creator, a real creator, not just a writer, a creator. She is a love language. I believe that.
Jabari, that seemed to really resonate with you.
Yeah, I think it's, Janae made me think of family and how important Toni Morrison was in chronicling the experience of the Black family, you know, in its beauty and its ugliness, in all of it, you know. And I think also I was thinking of an anecdote where she talked about editing Muhammad Ali and how first she perceived that he had trouble respecting women, but then she thought that the way in was that he obviously respected older women. So she addressed him as if she were his mother. And that kind of brought him in. And so I think of her also in that aspect that she's a word mother, right? She's maternal. She's wise. She knows so much more than I could. And she relays it to me in a kind, generous, and forceful when necessary manner.
You talked about the fact that, you know, she presented life and its beauty and its ugliness in Beloved, which some critics have called her seminal work. When she talks about it, she essentially says that it pulled her into setting a story during slavery, which she didn't want to do. I want to play a cut of her speaking about how she ended up writing Beloved. You know, she clearly resisted where the story was calling her to go.
I had been dragged there by the force of the ideas and the characters that I had invented. And I really felt as though I were being kicked into that place, kicking and screaming and saying, why couldn't this life, this problem, this world I want to talk about be in the 1930s or something that I thought I could deal with? I just didn't want to go there. It was too painful. And then I thought, well, if they lived it, then maybe I could spend a few years simply writing it.
So it, I mean, there is sacrifice there. She sacrificed herself to the story. Janae, does this resonate with you, this idea of one's art dragging you, kicking and screaming somewhere you don't want to go?
Yeah. There's a lot of times when I don't want to sit at my laptop and write because it hurts, or I'm mad, or I'd rather scream or cry or hide or just pretend it's all not happening. I didn't want to write about Mother Morrison yesterday on deadline immediately when asked. So I threw a fit and went home first and then got it done this morning because she told us to. She told us not to despair. This is the time when artists create. This is how we heal through language. So yeah, I absolutely understand what it means to surrender to the words.
Jabbar, you have said that she's been an inspiration for your work. How? Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. In my most recent book, We Can't Breathe, is essentially a book-length examination of this idea of the master narrative, which I've extended and called narrative combat.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, language as Richard Wright said, is a battle over the nature of reality, right? And I think that Toni Morrison was insistent in saying there is this other reality, and it's my mission to expose you to it, to celebrate it, to revel in it, to revel in the wonders of language by ushering in this other interpretation of what reality is. And I tried to examine that in my own way, and We Can't Breathe, but it was definitely inspired by her idea of the master narrative.
One of the things that struck me in preparing for this yesterday and today and listening to and reading interviews of her and watching her speak, she called out white interviewers often for their ignorance, their lack of understanding, for questions that they would ask her that they would never dream of asking a white author. And in fact, at one point, and I won't get this exactly right, but she talked about the fact that Americanism is defined so much as whiteness that white people are the only people who don't have to hyphenate. Everybody else has to hyphenate their Americanism. What do white people not understand about the presence and loss of Toni Morrison that needs to be especially put out in the world in her memory today, that white people need to begin to grapple with and try to understand for themselves? And I ask that question to either of you.
Well, I think white people need to do actually what black people need to do as well. When someone like Toni Morrison is speaking, I think the best response is to listen and to listen humbly without some preconceived notion of what's accurate or inaccurate about what it is she has to share. I went to her with an open mind and open arms, but I think that even if I had not, even if I had been somewhat skeptical, the power, the eloquence, the brilliance would in time have worn down my skepticism and encouraged me to close my lips and open my ears, which I think is what everyone should do in response to her.
You've even returned to her works more than once to learn again, isn't that right?
It's like, for me, her works are like, they're like the works of Du Bois, they're like the works of Ellison and Baldwin, they're my secular scriptures. And I turn to them for spiritual enlightenment, for emotional fulfillment, for intellectual elevation. There's a new lesson revealed every time you read Toni Morrison, even if you've read the book 10 times.
Janae, when somebody passes away, it brings their work back into the forefront. It's a little different, I think, with Toni Morrison because I think she's actually always present. But even then, it people review, they reevaluate, they remember. So as her work is being cast back into the forefront in this particular American cultural moment, what does her work offer that we most need right now?
I'm going to answer that question, but I also want to add on to Jabari's answer about what white people need to do about Toni Morrison.
Please, in either order, whatever works for you.
When black people die, especially when they're black giants and heroes and lions, this thing happens where we remember them as these wonderful black legends who did great things for black people. Toni Morrison did great things for people. We were center. Black people were center in her world. And I love that. But it's not just a gift to us. It's a gift to America. It's a gift to the world to see us, to really see us and grapple with that. What was the second question again?
So the second question was, what in this refocusing of attention right now on her work, in this particular turbulent, awful, I would argue, moment in America, what does her work bring that is particularly important or that we need to particularly focus on right now?
The dedication to honesty, to honesty even when it's hard, and also not just to the suffering, but to the beauty of life. Toni Morrison really understood the nuances and the fullness of life. And I feel like we get lost in the tragedy in a way that amplifies the suffering so much so that you forget the humanness.
I really want to bring her voice back in to the conversation. So this is a speech in 2004 where she questioned the idea of one generation passing their wisdom to another generation, but ended with this encouragement for the students she was speaking to. This is at Wellesley College.
You are your own stories, and therefore free to imagine and experience what it means to be human without wealth. What it feels like to be human without domination over others, without reckless arrogance, without fear of others unlike you, without rotating, rehearsing, and reinventing the hatreds you learned in the sandbox. And although you don't have complete control over the narrative, no author does, I can tell you. You can nevertheless create it.
Jabari, on Twitter yesterday, at Claire Shrugged, tweeted, quote, "The best way to honor Toni Morrison is to continue her legacy by celebrating and supporting Black female writers," end quote. She included a thread of some of those writers. Who are some of the writers that you think in the legacy of Toni Morrison we should be raising up?
Well, there's so many, you know, and so the danger in just naming a handful, you appear to deliberately exclude others. So, but off the top of my head, I would say Bernice McFadden, Crystal Wilkinson, Naomi Jackson, T.R.E. Jones, just to name a few.
Thank you. Janae, who would you add?
Again, this is not, you know, the full list for either of us, but right now in this moment, I think of Jessamyn Ward. I even think of Angie Thomas, who is very new and young, but doing the work. I think of, honestly, I would just go back and read Audre Lorde, okay. who we don't read enough of.
Audre Lorde?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me just a sec. Sorry about that. So my last question then is, somebody's coming to Toni Morrison's work for the first time now, in awareness of her passing. If you could commend to them the first piece of her writing that you would want them to pick up, what would it be, Jabari?
For me, it would be The Bluest Eye. I think that's a good place to start. Actually, any place is a good place to start, but that's probably, ask me tomorrow, I might have a different answer. But today, that's what I would say.
Today, that's the one. Mm-hmm. How about you, Janae?
Since he went with Bluest Eye, which I would have gone with, I'm going to go with Beloved. Mm-hmm. Simply because I turned to Beloved to really honor her. There's this quote in Beloved, "She is a friend of my mind. She gathered me, man. The pieces I am, she gathered them and gave them back to me in all the right order." That's something a slave said as he was remembering someone he loved.
Mm.
And it's something that we can say about Toni Morrison. She gave us all the pieces in all the right order.
Janae Osterholt is a cultural writer for the Boston Globe. Her piece for the Globe today is A Song for Toni Morrison. We have a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Thank you, Janae.
Thank you.
Jabari Asim, distinguished fellow at Emerson College and director of Emerson's Graduate Creative Writing Program. His most recent book of essays is entitled We Can't Breathe, on Black Lives, White Lies, and the Art of Survival. Thank you, Jabari.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead here on Radio Boston.